From taxes and spending to public safety, the St. John's River, and the HRO, the new city council president has a full plate ahead. In a moment, he takes your calls. Good Monday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. Hope your first day back to school is going well if you're in Duval County. And make sure to always subscribe to our daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just ahead, it's your chance to connect with Greg Anderson as he looks ahead to a year of leading the city council through a host of challenges. Get on the line now, 549-2937, to connect with him. Then later, Cole Pepper as the Sharks go for that Arena League title. Very exciting sports news, plus a new option for swimmers on the city south side. All of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, with his low-key, friendly style, he's seen as the right man for the right time. Oh, he's laughing. As Jacksonville city leaders try to grapple with several high-stakes issues, from public safety to taxes and spending, whether to dredge the St. John's River, and so much more. Lots to discuss as Jacksonville City Council President Greg Anderson joins us this Monday with a look ahead to some critical priorities for the next year, and he's taking your calls. Greg Anderson, always a pleasure. Good morning.
Melissa, good morning. It's great to be here. Hope you survived that storm last night.
I know, right?
Right. It was a little bit crazy.
Yeah. Well, hopefully the sun will shine as everyone goes back to school in Duval this morning. Actually, they're in school now, but we're talking city government right now. So what are your questions for Council President Anderson? Get on the line now at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet us. Lots of comments already for you, Greg, on our Facebook page. We'll get to those in a moment. But as I mentioned, as you prepare to lead the city council through the next fiscal year, public safety, budgets, taxes, and spending are all at the top of your agenda. Let's talk about your biggest priorities, beginning with public safety. That's at the top of your list, correct?
It is. It is. Again, good morning, everyone. It's great to be in Jacksonville. It's a great Monday. I know everybody's busy getting to school, and I'm thrilled to be here. When I took office, I laid out an agenda, and at the very top of that list is public safety. I feel that we need to make sure that all our neighborhoods are safe. And the really great news is that the mayor's budget priority actually lined up very well with that. And you saw his budget presented, which has 40 new CSOs, community service officers, 40 new police officers. But what really went unreported was his commitment to the firefighters. A number of them had been funded with public grants or grants from the federal government. And we picked those up in our budget, too, so there were no cutbacks as well. So I think you'll continue to see that as an emphasis. You can tell by the stories that we've had a spike in violent crime, and it's time to turn the tide on that.
There's also been talk of bringing back former Mayor Payton's long-term crime prevention strategy and initiatives, the Jacksonville Journey. Where are you on that, and how do you see that possibly getting funded?
Right. So first of all, I'm supportive of that, and you Melissa, you know that the mayor included about a $3 million increase in the Jacksonville Journey. This is the first time we've really seen an increase in the budget in several years. And the really neat way that he did it was he didn't identify any particular program. What he said was, let's get Kerry Stewart, who was involved in the initial formation of that program and is his chief of staff. Let's let her evaluate the programs and identify how to spend those funds. So it'll be a program-specific spend is my guess. There's no doubt that we can't arrest our way out of this. It has to be an effort of increased public safety in terms of policemen and firemen, but it also has to be investment, proper investment in our communities, especially those areas of our community where we have highest crimes.
And what are your questions for Jacksonville City Council President Greg Anderson, whether it's big priorities for the whole city or what's going on in your neighborhood? Get on the line now. We'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. And when it comes to investing in the city, the budget process going on now, I believe, is also looking at beefing up infrastructure around town, correct?
That's right. That's right. Thank you, Melissa. A couple of comments on that. First of all, former council president Bill Gulliford is the chair of finance, and he's done a great job leading the finance committee through the budget. They're scheduled to wrap up on Friday. I was with them until the end last Friday. They finished up about 6:30. And at this point, the budget is sort of ahead of where we would expect, which is good news. So we've got about three more days of budget hearings. And so far, so good. Now, I do want to mention something that is a consistent theme that we're finding, and that is that capital improvements, have really been behind. And all you need to do is drive around and see our sidewalks and see the roads. But most acutely, I think, if you go downtown and look at Coastline Drive and Liberty Street, Liberty Street has had two sections fall into the river, and obviously we've got to address that. So you'll see this week the budget committee review the capital improvement program, and I expect there'll be a big focus on that.
On repairing the Liberty Street collapse?
Well, infrastructure in its entirety, but I suspect that we'll see at least an initial plan on improvement there.
Now, under former Mayor Brown, relations between the mayor's office and the city council weren't always optimal. How do you see this council, which has quite a few new members, by the way,
right,
working with the new mayor, Lenny Curry?
Well, it's so far really positive. I think for my part, I believe that an executive branch and a legislative branch working together is really best for the citizens. And so I think the communication level has been improved dramatically. I don't know if you know this or not, Melissa, but I meet with the mayor twice a month. Met with him Friday. We go back and forth. It's once in my office and once in his office. Last Friday was his office. And we just talk about sort of the issues. So improved communication. The second thing that I'll mention to you is that I think this mayor has brought in a team of experienced managers, Sam Musa, Mike Weinstein, really excellent group. And what you're seeing is a very high level of confidence in that management team.
Let's go to your calls right now for Greg Anderson. What are your questions for the city council president, whether it's public safety, budget, taxes and spending, or other issues? Get on the line now, 549-2937. Jay's in Jacksonville. Hey, Jay, happy Monday to you. Good morning.
Good morning, you all, and thank you for taking my call. I'll try to be really brief. I think one of the biggest issues, especially when dealing with crime, is that it's really hard to get a job in Jacksonville specifically for ex-offenders. I personally have a felony on my record, and I put in, and I'm not going to exaggerate, a little over 300 applications before I got a job. I'm highly skilled. I have a management degree, which I earned while in prison. I've been out of prison for over 8 years. I relocated here from Rhode Island. But before I was able to do so, I submitted several applications. I was denied even at the center that help you find jobs. They said because of my record, they couldn't place me. So are there any initiatives that the gentleman knows of that is pending or at least being discussed in the legislature to prevent businesses from requiring background checks like they do in Rhode Island? And I'll take the response on here.
Thanks, Jay. Jay in Jacksonville. Greg Anderson.
Well, Jay, thank you for your call. I am absolutely aware of the difficulty of ex-offenders finding employment in Duval County. There are certain programs that that I understand work specifically with ex-offenders to try to help. I think Claire White has part of that.
There's
program.
Ready for Work and Operation
right.
New Hope. mm-hmm. for example. Mm-hmm.
So there are a number of programs that are out there, and I hope you have a chance to sort of touch base with those organizations to try to keep things moving forward. But Jay, you're right. When you've done your time and when you're ready to get back and get to work, it's a lot harder. And I do believe that as part of the Jacksonville journey, that they're going to be looking at that as well. So good luck to you, Jay.
Right. And Jay, if you're listening, the city's Operation New Hope and Ready mm-hmm. for Work, that's the number for work. They have reentry programs for ex-offenders. And when the Jacksonville journey was being implemented, a reentry component was a big part of that initiative.
That's exactly right.
And all of the people tasked with looking at the issues in this city recognize that when people are coming out of incarceration, if they can't find work, they're likely to reoffend. And
right.
so it will be interesting to see if that's an aggressive focus.
Jay, stay in touch with us and let us know how you do. Good luck to you. And please do reach out to the organizations that Melissa had mentioned.
And we'll go back to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. Let's go to a few of your social media comments. Here is one from Scott coming in on our Facebook page. Illegal snipe signs continue to litter the city. Is the city council prepared to fine the lawbreakers who continue to thumb their nose at existing snipe sign laws? And he tweeted us a photo of some snipe signs in his own neighborhood.
That's right. Melissa, we've been working on this for a couple years. It really was an initiative that came out of former Councilwoman Denise Lee's Blight Subcommittee. And there are fines existing. So the first answer is it's really about making sure that our compliance group is really managing that. But we have struggled to try to figure out how do you balance we buy ugly houses mm-hmm. sign from, my church is having a bake sale. And what we did was put forth a bill, and it increased the fines rather dramatically. I think that got to council, and the full council was not comfortable, so we put it back to the subcommittee. So right now, it is in the Blight.2 committee, which is called NICE, the NICE committee. And
by the way, why was the Blight committee changed to the NICE committee?
That was Chairman Dennis. His suggestion.
Oh, okay.
And Melissa, I think it was appropriate. It's a neighborhood improvement
oh,
and
okay.
community enhancement.
Oh, there you go.
Committee, and it really focuses the attention of the committee back into the neighborhoods. You know, if we have strong neighborhoods, we know we have a strong Jacksonville.
And former Councilwoman Denise Lee, now working for the Curry administration, had really taken the lead on Blight.
Mm-hmm.
How important do you see that effort as being in terms of improving quality of life around town?
It is a huge driver for really our entire community. And it's things that you sort of see and you don't pay attention to, like cutting grass and litter. And a lot of the initiatives really focused with vacant property and how those are being used in criminal activities. And so we owe a lot of thanks to Councilwoman Lee for really pushing that initiative.
And if you're just tuning in, lots of feedback for Jacksonville City Council President Greg Anderson. Calls, emails, tweets, Facebook comments. What are your questions? You can connect right now. 549-2937. Ron in Jacksonville. Hi, Ron. Happy Monday to you. Good morning. Go ahead.
Thank you, Melissa. I just wanted to ask about the council's approach to the landing, and obviously some of the recent developments that maybe were underwhelming for some. Does the city plan to kind of be involved, and in what level does the councilman believe they should be?
Thanks. Okay, sure. Thank you. So I think everybody believes that the landing, it's time for a redo. The the owner of the property. Now, the city owns the land, but the lease itself is Slayman. And so Tony's got a very, very long-term lease on that property. And I believe that Tony's actively involved in looking at a number of iterations for improvement. It's one of these things, and this is my opinion, that we've got a lot of cooks in the kitchen right now. Everybody seems to have an opinion on what the best thing to do is. I know some of the former council members said, you know, let's just turn it into a public park. I've had other people say that it needs to be residential and retail. But until we have a real consensus in the community on what the right direction is, it's going to be hard to move forward. I will tell you, it is a very high priority for me right now, and I'm having conversations with it right now.
How do you see the landing fitting into overall efforts when it comes to the urban core, the city's downtown investment authority?
Well, it's sort of the linchpin of downtown. I mean, you know, Melissa, when people come from downtown or come from out of town, they, you know, often, you know, they ask where should we go, and and you know, they seem to center around the landing. So, you know, it is part of who we are. So I think some of the new plans include improved green space, which I think is a terrific idea. I'd love to have more green space down there. I do think it still needs to be a gathering point. It seems to serve that purpose for the community. It's a great view if you're down there at night and you can look at our skyline. It's, you know, it's hard to beat that.
Yeah. Are you in favor of tearing the whole thing down and starting over? That's been discussed.
Melissa, there are a number of projects that are being discussed right now, and let's see how those all
you know, a very work. Diplomatic answer from Greg Anderson, and lots of calls. Let's go to Maria in Putnam County.
Hey, Maria.
Hi, Maria. Go ahead.
Hey, hi, everybody. Hi, Councilman Anderson. Thank you for wanting to make everything safe, but you know, we can't make everything safe anymore. I'm wanting to move to Jacksonville, but I still have some reservations. I think I better stay put because of crime, mainly. There's so many issues, and yet I think sometimes solving one issue creatively can bring in salvation problems to other issues. For example, we've got drainage water running amok in Florida. We've got water management district controlling every drop of drainage water in the United States. They're nonprofit. You can't sue them for the damage. County governments are using blight ordinances now to shift their responsibility on fixing the damage and the drainage water problems. Why aren't we transporting this drainage water to the areas of the country as if it were a garden that need water desperately? To water their crops, put out fires, to keep from becoming a desert, if you will. And let's put to work people to build these holding tanks and transport this, like Jay in Jacksonville looking for these initiative programs to place prisoners who've served their time and are now looking to get back into the swing of things. And let's also hook up people who've been victims of violent crimes that have ruined their lives.
You do need to move to Jacksonville.
People's paychecks.
Yeah, Maria.
Maria, you need to move to Jacksonville.
I could go on and on.
You've got a real vision for it.
I think you should move here and be part of the solution.
Yeah, I thought you were going to ask about the Rodman Dam when you called.
Well, that would solve a lot of that problem, too. We know the drainage water that should be going back into St. John's is not, and it's causing, I think, algae problems. But I'm no expert. I'm just exercising.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your call.
You're welcome, and thank you, sir.
Thanks,
well,
Maria.
Thank you very, very much. You know, the water is a key issue for Florida, and really protecting our water sources, both the aquifer and the river, I think will be a key issue going forward.
What did you think about her? And I have a follow up for you about the river and water. But what about her comment that she just doesn't want to move to Jacksonville because she's concerned about public safety?
Well, it clearly is a priority for this administration, and certainly for me, and I think for the council as well. The governor came to see us 3 or 4 months ago and made a statement that crime is at a 44-year low. And I think that's probably true, but it sure doesn't feel that way, Melissa. Some of these violent crimes, I mm-hmm. think, really scare us. They scare me. And I think, the new sheriff, Mike Williams, has got a plan to really address that.
Here is a follow-up for you regarding the St. John's River. On our sure. Facebook page, as Lisa writes, the Port Task Force was working on more significant environmental mitigation for dredging the river than had been recommended by the Army mm-hmm. Corps of Engineers. Mm-hmm. Now that Mayor Curry has disbanded that task force, what will happen about mitigation? Which, let's talk for a minute about where things stand in terms of plans to dredge the St. John's River down to a depth of 47 feet to accommodate bigger cargo ships. The St. John's River Keeper has filed a lawsuit regarding this. And how do you see the council working with this issue?
Okay. Thank you, Lisa, for that call. Let's see. Number one, I don't believe any amount of economic activity can overcome a polluted river. So I believe that has to be the top priority. We can't damage our river. The Port Task Force was disbanded by the mayor. He's made comments about that. You can refer those questions directly to the mayor. But let's talk a little bit about where we are with the port. Number one, the argument for economic activity, increased economic activity through the port. It's a pretty solid argument, best I can tell. And we know that our port is sort of underperforming other ports. But there are a number of projects that are ongoing, including Mile Point, which is sort of we're in the middle of that project right now. There's a rail project where you'll be able to bring cargo directly into the rail heads as well. And then improvements in the infrastructure. All that's ongoing right now. And you see the results. You can see that that year over year, the port container volume is up. Autos are way up. We won, I think, the Volkswagen contract as well. So the port seems to be moving in the right direction. The right depth, how to pay for it, those are still outstanding issues, and I don't believe they're resolved anywhere.
Yeah, how do you see in this era where you're going through that budget line by line and allocating dollars in this tight economic climate? How will this massive project be funded? Are there any discussions going on in City Hall about how that's strategically going to be accomplished?
I'm not aware of any significant discussions. I mean, I think everybody knows that it's a project that makes economic sense if we can protect the river. And I believe that most city leaders would tell you that. But how we pay for it, what percentage the federal government pays for, what percentage the state pays for, how we fund the local portion, those are all still up in the air.
And lots of callers waiting on hold to connect with City Council President Greg Anderson on a whole range of issues. We'll go back to the phones in just a moment. Here's another email from Jim, a listener. Is the city working on contingency plans for sea level rise like other waterfront communities in Florida?
The answer is I'm not aware of the details of that. We have an emergency management group that does look at key risks to the city, and I suppose they've looked at that, but I'm not aware of the details.
And let's get one more comment in from Facebook. You voted in favor of the human rights ordinance in 2012, Greg. It failed by one vote. And Kelly comments on Facebook, how will this city council respond differently to an HRO effort as opposed to the 2012 response?
Well, thank you very much. You're correct. I voted for an amended version of the bill. It had been debated for a couple months at the time. It was a very emotional debate. You might remember that, Melissa. We have 11 new council members. That is a majority of the council. And so the direct answer is, I'm not sure how the council will vote. I think many of them have gone on record during their during their campaigns. So I think you could do some research on that. There is no bill in front of the council right now, and so it's I can't really speculate on how things will move. I will say one other thing, and that is the mayor during his campaign talked about a community conversation around this, and my sense is that he's kind of willing to lead on that. And Melissa, I think that might make sense. I think given, the previous council sort of lived the, it really was a very dividing issue for this community, and sometimes it's better to have a conversation. So mm-hmm. I'd like to see that happen.
Scott in Arlington. Scott, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Hi, Scott from Arlington. I'm a travel agent, and I see that we have one cruise ship here in Jacksonville, but I look at Port Canaveral, and they're bringing millions of dollars into their community by expanding their cruise port. Do you think the city council would take a look at bringing more cruise ships to Jacksonville?
Okay, thanks,
Scott. That's a good question. So, certainly we would be interested in looking at it. I think that's a decision that would be more directed towards the port, the port executive management and their board. They really would make that decision. But great question.
And that goes to your larger goal of just looking at all sorts of economic development initiatives for this area.
Right. Melissa, we have seen some pretty significant announcements.
Yeah, just in the last few days.
Yeah. And these are great jobs for this community. And I'll make a couple comments. Number one, Macquarie decided to locate in Jacksonville. And when we were being briefed about their decision, it became clear that we didn't just compete nationally with with other cities around the country, but we were competing internationally for that location. So the message is very clear. We are competing and winning internationally for these types of opportunities. Mm-hmm. You see, Deutsche Bank is going to continue to add jobs here. You see, Citi, mm-hmm. Their announcement. There are a number of other announcements that are going to be made. And so I think from a job standpoint, the message is that Jacksonville is competing very well. I think I'll also mention to you that these are diversified jobs. What I mean by that is they're not just big call centers. They're they're software developers. They're financial services. They're manufacturers. And that's really good for us. We want to have a diversified base of employment. The other thing is that for many of these, they're diversified geographically. So you see they're located in the Northwest Corridor. We see some downtown. We see some on the South Side. That's also very good. So the news on the job front continues to be very good.
Patrick in Ocean Way, as we get calls from across the listening area this morning. Hey, Patrick, how are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a question. I recently started bicycling. So I live on the north side by the airport. So I've bicycled around the north side and also into downtown, and I haven't noticed very many bikeways or anything like that. I was just wondering if there's any movement afoot to start working on being a little bit more biker-friendly.
Yeah, great question. That's, it really speaks to who we are. I mean, I live over on the west side, and we see a lot of bikers over there, and so the fact that we're living in a community where you can, it's pretty hot to be biking.
I know. But they're out there. But we're rated one of the least walkable, least bikeable communities in America. Right. So when you look at infrastructure improvements, do you see that as being part of the package?
It is. It's a very high priority. And let me tell you a couple things. Several years ago, Councilwoman Boyer and I was on the committee as well. We we had a committee called Context Sensitive Streets. That's a funny name, but what it really said was we wanted to look at the way that our streets should function. You know, how fast should cars move through there? What is the landscaping? And so we put in place some standards. So for new streets, they will all take into account bicycle and pedestrian traffic. Mm-hmm. So the good news is we're trying to address it from that standpoint. The second thing we did was we created a position that had not existed before. It's a bicycle safety coordinator, and they're on staff now in City Hall.
Interesting. And we can't close without reading aloud this tweet coming into you, Greg Anderson, from former chief of staff to Mayor Alvin Brown. Chris Hand, does your role as council president mean you will stay neutral in this year's Florida-Georgia game? You already answered him on Twitter, it looks like.
Yeah. Well, Chris, thank you for that question. You know, Chris and we worked along and together, and he is a good friend and a good man. And Chris, no, I am not staying neutral.
Well, you went to Georgia, right?
Right.
So I think, unfortunately for Florida fans.
So the real fun thing is that Lenny is a big Gator fan.
Oh, okay.
So I told him that if I found a red jacket, maybe he could find a blue jacket, and maybe we'll have a little friendly wager.
Maybe you need to pose for some interesting photos
in your
colors. I think those would get a lot of pickup.
Right, right.
Always great to talk to you.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you so much for being with us.
I sure enjoy being here.
Greg Anderson, the president of the Jacksonville City Council, joining us this morning, and much more still ahead later. Cole Pepper on a thrilling ride for the Jacksonville Sharks, all about their road to an Arena League title. But up next, spotlighting the new North Florida Swim Center. That's in a moment.
Relax Radio is the great American songbook, oldies and light jazz.
It's the radio station I was always looking for and never found until now.
Harry Moonbeam's home in a jar.
Relax Radio is the station you can listen to all day on your HD radio. Make a $120 gift to WJCT and you'll receive an HD radio so you can tune in to Relax. Call 904-353-9528 for more information.
Calling all educators, WJCT and Community First is proud to present the 4th Annual Teach Conference, an event created by teachers to engage, empower, and inspire teachers. Saturday, September 12th at the Hyatt Regency Riverfront Hotel. Tickets are only $30. Spend the day sharing ideas with colleagues, learning new ways to engage students, and empowering yourself to inspire others. Bring a friend and get your tickets now. WJCT.org/teach.
On the next Fresh Air, we begin a week of our favorite interviews from the year with one featuring Toni Morrison. Her latest novel, God Help the Child, is about a dark-skinned girl born to light-skinned parents.
I hate to say it, but from the very beginning in the maternity ward, the baby embarrassed me.
Morrison will talk about her book, her life, and getting older. She's now 84. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Spend some time in the Square, an online venue for local artists. WJCT, the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville, and Grassroots Natural Market invite you to vote for your favorite submission. Vote now through the end of the month. To learn more about the Square and to place your vote, visit wjct.org/thesquare.
Many low-income health clinics have been rejuvenated or completely rebuilt with Katrina disaster relief funds.
Today, a patient can call and get same-day primary care. This is not urgent care. It's not emergency room care. It's real primary care.
A visit to one later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Weekdays at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Welcome back. Well, drowning is the leading cause of accidental death in Florida. So understandably, thousands of parents in our area want to make sure their kids learn how to swim. That's why there's so much excitement at news that a new indoor swimming facility is planned for the South Side, just off Beach Boulevard. The North Florida Swim Center is expected to fill a real void in this area in terms of all manner of swimming lessons and activities for kids and adults alike. Head coach Mel Nash here now to tell us all about it. Good morning.
Thank you, Melissa. Glad to be here.
So good to have you on the show. This is exciting news. As I said, I think this really fills a void for the city. How did this all come about?
Well, we came here, my wife and I, in May of 2011. We worked at UNF, University of North Florida, indoor 50-meter pool, nice facility built in the 80s. And we got here. The swim team had 70 kids on it, and we grew it to 270 in a little over a year. And then in 2013, December, they closed the facility due to old age. And there really were no other viable indoor facilities immediately available. We have Cecil, which is a nice facility, but pretty far out of the center of the city. So we looked around the country, and there are several places doing this very successfully. And we said, let's look if we can put one up ourselves, because we also lost tons of lessons at UNF. They did over 2,000 lessons a year. And so that just dried up.
Right. Thousands of people were literally tossed out of the pool when that facility on the campus closed.
It was a tough one. It was swimming, diving, water polo, a little bit of synchronized swimming, water aerobics for senior citizens, and swim lessons, again, such a huge need, especially in a city such as ours with all the water.
So how did a business plan and a group of people came together to build the North Florida Swim Center. This will be on Beach Boulevard, along Beach Boulevard on 4th Street, just east of Southside Boulevard. When will it be open to the public, and how can people sign up?
Well, it opens sometime next summer. We closed on the land July 10th, and now we're in the process of finalizing design, financing, and moving forward. The construction we're doing, a lot of people don't understand. We're building a building with a steel construction, and it's a lot faster. There's a pool up in Greenville that we just swam at a couple of weeks ago for our championships. Mm-hmm. And from the day they demolished their existing facility till they dove in the water was 8 months. So it's a very quick turnaround on construction. So we feel like we can have it up by the summer, which is great because it's coming into the Olympics, and it'll be on the front pages all around the country.
There's so much interest in swimming as a sport, water activity for rehabilitation purposes. And it's interesting also to read that you're going to establish a foundation to provide funding for kids that might not be able to afford the cost of the lesson program. That's exciting too.
Absolutely. And that's one of our biggest things. Right now, there's in the two cities that we've really modeled after, there's a Swim America program in Clovis, California, does 25,000 lessons a year. They have no water in their city, no square miles of water. Austin does over 2,000, it's Nitro Aquatics, does over 2,000 lessons a week. They have 7 square miles of water in Austin, same population base, 7 square miles of water. We have 127 square miles of water in Jacksonville before you count the ocean.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, every spring we have unnecessary kids losing their lives and adults losing their lives. And unfortunately, again, we have a lot of pools in town, but they're not heated. They're not available in the spring. So you get to that April, May when the water is warm enough for people to get in, but they haven't had time to take swim lessons. That's why we feel an indoor facility is so imperative to get more people mm-hmm. learning how to swim and get ready to be safe for the summer.
And unlike the UNF facility that was 25, 30 years old, this is going to be a state-of-the-art facility. What are some of the modern upgrades?
It is. It's what we like to call it. It's a first-class facility with world-class programming. We're not building the Taj Mahal. We're building a very solid facility because when you build the Taj Mahal, all it does is cost a lot of money. It doesn't bring much more in. It just mm-hmm. looks big and pretty.
Uh-huh.
We can host big meets. We can teach the lessons. We have three bodies of water. We have the big 50-meter pool, and then we have two four-lane 25-yard pools, and they'll be at three different temperatures, 80 degrees, 85, 90, with 90 being for rehab and mommy and me classes, infant swimming, 85 that mid-range, and then the 80 degrees for serious swimmers, triathletes, master swimmers, people of that.
It sounds as though all age groups can find something to participate in at the North Florida Swim Center.
Honestly, we're from absolutely 6 months all the way to, I know Tiger Holmes is one of our biggest supporters in this, and he's 93 or 94, acts 12, but he, I know we'll have him over there, and we have people into their 90s that are looking forward to having a place to exercise.
It's a private facility. You'll have to join, you'll have to buy a membership, right?
Yes. Not for swim lessons, but for the rest of it, whether you're on the swim team or masters or anything like that, it will be a membership-driven and a lot of programming in the facility.
Anything else people need to know? I mean, we're looking at a year out till people can enjoy this, but a lot will happen between now and then.
Well, and we have a lot of things going. We have naming opportunities from scoreboards to all three different pools if people want to get involved in that way. And it will be something that will bring business to the city. It'll be one of the few indoor pools in the state. There's only four or five in the entire state.
Really?
And I know, being all the years that I was at Texas A&M, we had Dallas has 20 to 25 indoor 50-meter pools, and Houston has 10 to 12. So all these cities have them, but because we're in Florida, people think, oh,
just
we're
go
good. We can go
and
outside.
Swim. Right, right.
If it's not heated, you get to that 45 degrees in January, it's not real fun.
Exactly. Let's get a call in for Coach Mel Nash of the North Florida Swim Center. Jim on the north side. Hey, Jim, go ahead.
Yes, ma'am. I got a question for you. I think that is an awesome idea, and I think kids of all ages and races should learn how to swim. And I know about the one down on Normandy. I guess they call it the aquatic center, I guess, and the one you're going to be putting on the south side. But is there one on the north side, or is there plans to put one on the north side? Because I know that's where you have a lot of your low-income children, in that area, and I know a lot of them don't know how to swim. Is there anything on the north side, or is there any plan to do so? Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
Actually, I know a little bit about that. Before I got here, I guess there was a bond issue passed to put a swimming pool on the north side. I think it was $4.9 million, and they commissioned some for feasibility studies. And Councilman Hunsaker was, they're the number one pool consultant business in the world. They actually did our pool at Texas A&M. And they came in, and the plans ended up being a $22 to $24 million facility to get what everybody wanted. So, and that's part of what we see as a privately owned, our facility is going to be $6 to $7 million. And you can do that and make it financially feasible. The problem when you build a great big Taj Mahals is they don't bring in any more revenue, and they use up a whole lot of tax dollars, and it starts to kind of be a little bit of an albatross around the neck. So what we're trying to do is something that will be very feasible and usable by the community, but it will be run at as a good solid business plan that won't go under and take any tax dollars.
And we'll continue to follow the work of your foundation that will look at how to get children from poor neighborhoods to your location for free or reduced cost lessons.
Absolutely. We have ages 5 to 19 in the United States, and this is such an unfortunate statistic, 5.5 times the rate. African Americans drown to whites. An 11 and 12 African-American kids drown at 10 times the rate of white children, and that's not acceptable. So that's really what we want our foundation to help anybody who's underprivileged come in and have the opportunity to learn to swim.
Exciting news, and thanks for sharing it with us. We'll continue to follow this along as it works toward opening day. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having us.
He's Coach Mel Nash of the new North Florida Swim Center, and Culpepper's up next as the Sharks go for the title.
WJCT is proud to be your number one preset for your evening commute. But if you only turn on 89.9 when you're driving, here's what you're missing.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for
listening. This is The World.
Spend your afternoons with WJCT for unique conversations about the topics of the day. Join us weekdays from 2 to 6 for The Takeaway, The World, and All Things Considered. It's the smart way to spend your afternoon.
Follow what's happening at WJCT, even when you're away from your radio. You can follow WJCT on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can listen live online to WJCT-FM at wjct.org/listen, or on iTunes Radio or TuneIn Radio. And you can hear all of your favorite WJCT-FM shows anytime on demand on iTunes and Stitcher. Wherever you are, WJCT is there.
If you're trying to make it in the comedy world today, here with some words of wisdom.
If you hacked someone's joke and used it, you would be instantly ostracized.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. The rules, however, might be different on the internet. I don't know. We'll tell you more next time on Marketplace from 8 p.m.
Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Finally, this hour, exciting news as the Sharks will play for the Arena League title.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper, wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
Culpepper has the highlights and a look at the rest of the weekend sports. Wow, they're going for the title.
Yeah, they knocked off the favored Philadelphia Soul 61-56 over the weekend in the conference championship game to move on to the Arena Bowl. Notable here, it's the third time this year that the Sharks have beaten Philadelphia. Philly had only lost four games in total this year, including those three to Jacksonville. So the Sharks had Philadelphia's number. Interception in the final moments clinched it. After starting the season 0-4, the Sharks have won 12 of their last 16. So they are certainly on a roll heading to the Arena Bowl. And they're the first team to make it to the Arena Bowl after an 0-4 start. So they will face the San Jose Sabercats.
Oh, that's a good name.
Good name.
I like that.
Sounds like an 80s cartoon on Saturday night in Stockton, California.
Go Sharks! Go Sharks! So exciting. Meanwhile, the Jags losing Saturday to the New York Giants.
Yeah, the final scores of preseason games, less important.
Yeah.
We're so used to quantifying a game based on its final score. I would say that some of the areas that I'm looking for in every game, two big focuses. One is Blake Bortles, two is Luke Joeckel, and then 3 and 4, or 3A and 3B, is how the offense and defense do kind of in the big picture. Bortles was better than last year, but not as good as he was last week. So I think if the range of his play is going to be between what we've seen this week and last week, then that is certainly a step forward and a quarterback who's improving and taking that substantial step in his second year. Now, it's a small sample size. He hasn't even played a complete four quarters as of yet, but I think we're seeing some good things out of Bortles. As for Joeckel, the former first-round pick, second overall pick of the Jaguars, still looks like he's thinking too much to me out there. Didn't get beat for a sack as he did against the Steelers in the opener. Gus Bradley did praise him yesterday for saying he was better against the power rushes. So that's an improvement. But one of the big things for the Jaguars, of course, in order to score more points, score more touchdowns, convert more third downs, they need to have better pass protection. Hmm. They gave up over 70 sacks last year. Joeckel's really the cornerstone of that to help Bortles be able to have some time to stand there and make those throws. The offense did not find the end zone. Four field goals. So that's something that they need to improve on. Again, you can't just take it and say it happened in the preseason, it's going to happen all year. But if the Jaguars are going to be a more competitive team this year, they've got to score touchdowns and not settle for field goals. Running game does look promising, though, particularly when they run to the right. I think that's going to be a better area for the Jaguars to watch. And defense, no pass rush at all. They were benefited by the fact that Eli Manning looked like he had just woken up out of a deep sleep. He was not very good. But still some work to be done there as far as the pass rush is concerned. Six more injuries, though. None of them super serious, but the Jaguars have definitely been banged up so far in the preseason.
Well, they'll be on national TV against Detroit Friday, going up against high school football.
Yeah, I really don't like this. You know, the NFL needs to take a little better care. You know, they have typically stayed away from most of college football, but opening high school weekend and they're playing a preseason game that's nationally televised, I think it's a bad move by the NFL.
People's attention will be divided. Almost out of time. The Armada still looking for their first road win. And last but not least, the Associated Press College Football Top 25 poll of the season is out. Ohio State at number one.
The defending national champions, Urban Meyer's team. Georgia's number nine. Florida State is 10. There are eight SEC teams in the first poll of the year. If you add to go down to 27, it's two more. So 10 of the top 27 teams in the SEC this year.
But not Florida.
Florida would come in at something like 37 if you went all the way down the list.
Yeah, way down. But follow Cole on Twitter at Cole Pepper for all the sports news, especially the Sharks' big road to the title. And thanks for joining us as always.
Thanks a lot, Melissa.
And that's our program. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.